Detours family. We are here with another great episode. As always, I'm here with my beautiful wife, Deb.
Hi, guys.
And we are here today. We have an interesting episode that was kind of triggered by a conversation with a friend that we had a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah. She went on a date.
Poor girl. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And the guy did nothing but talk about himself for 3.5 hours.
And it was cringeworthy, the story. And so we thought we would put together an episode just kind of talking about what we, I guess we're just kind of calling conversation killers, if you will.
Yeah.
Is kind of what you, the phrase that you use, Deb.
Well, yes.
But, you know, it was, you know, we got lucky enough. We got married about 5.5 years ago. But like the lady that we were speaking to, we met online dating. We had met prior to it, but we reconnected through online dating. And did you have, what were your experiences like?
Oh, gosh. I can't. It's so bad. Prior to you, it was, you know, people giving you these like cookie cutter answers about how they're people. I'm a people person. I like my pets. I like travel. It was just like a list of things. It was all about them. And actually what stood out to me was yours was very inquisitive. Like your profile required people to answer questions like, what do you like? And what's your go-to when you're feeling sad? Or what's your favorite movie? And I thought, wow, this is like, this is intriguing. This is different.
Yeah, it was, but the whole point was just to kind of bypass all the fluff. You're in an uncomfortable situation anyway. To me, online dating is uncomfortable no matter what.
Sure.
So let's just get past all the fluff to get into actual interesting conversation. And I think what we're talking about today, we're using it in the premise just because our friend, it was a date. But I think this type of stuff also goes to just, it's harder nowadays to make friends than it was 20 years ago.
For sure.
For a lot of the same types of things, people don't understand how to have conversation, the appropriate etiquette. How do you not bring a conversation to a screeching halt, basically?
Yeah.
Or can you even get a conversation going?
True. And I think we're so used to being online and being behind keyboards that we forget that our tone and our attitude or our lack of enthusiasm screams when you're face to face with someone compared to when you're online.
Yeah. And I think our friend that came over that evening and was telling this story, and it's similar to what we experienced. And I think it's what a lot of people experience nowadays is when you leave conversations and you feel unheard or unseen.
That's the worst.
It's, you know, again, our friend, he was there talking about himself the whole time, didn't bother to ask her any questions. It was, you know.
Yeah. And the interesting part was she was trying to engage him with questions so that he would relay some of that back and ask questions of her to have this equal volley of, let me get to know you. And every question that she asked was answered. And then it was moving on to the next thing that I like about me or that I like to do. And I was just like, how did you sit there for 3 hours?
Yeah. So just, but so many times we'll walk away from a conversation at work. You can walk away from a conversation completely feeling unheard, unseen. It, you know, there's no avoiding it, but how do you come back from that? How do you learn from that?
Even in marriage and, you know, in deep friendships and acquaintanceships. Yeah, it happens because I think we need to relearn the art of communication.
Yeah, the society is creating a lot of these little tiny habits that destroy conversation over time, right? The glaring ones, I'm just going to real quickly, you know, kind of rattle off some of these and we'll circle back and talk to them.
Yeah.
But just cell phones. Right. You walk into a restaurant nowadays and then the family of four and all of them are sitting there on their phones and they're not even talking, let alone having family dinner or anything like, you know, So that's one example. Another is what our friend experienced, just a tremendous blind spot where the person was mm-hmm. talking about nothing but themselves, and every attempt to share in conversation got shut down.
Yeah. Or someone that's constantly giving you the resume of what they've done and where they've gone and, you know, constantly trying to give their accolades. I don't know if you've come across those people, but they're exhausting.
Yeah. And one that you mentioned, you kind of put together some notes beforehand for our episode that I read that resonated with me, was the what I always refer to as the one upper.
Yes.
Somebody that no matter what you say, what story you have, they got something better.
Oh, I got something good.
Yeah. So why don't we start with that one?
Okay.
So, right. So conversation killers, we'll just kind of call this. To have a conversation with a person that no matter what you say, they have something better.
Or how, I've done that, but let me tell you about my experience. So it's always, I've done what you've done. I've done it better. And let me now brag about how much fun I had in whatever it is. And you're just thinking, this isn't about you. We're sharing information, and that's great. Let me get through my story and then enjoy it with me. Be with me. If you happen to have something that was better, is it necessary to bring it up in this conversation, or could we possibly circle back around the next time we meet? So I don't feel like, you know, it's like the whole Instagram, or everybody's filtered. Everyone's got this perfect life that they're curating online, and you look at it and you're like, yeah, no one's putting the pictures up where they're crying on their bed, or, sure, you know, they're in sweatpants and their hair's in a messy bun.
Yeah. It's tough when someone is a story topper. What makes it uncomfortable for me is no matter what happens, it always circles back to being about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what you need to avoid. So if you're trying to be a better friend,
right,
if you're trying to be a better spouse, if you're trying to be a better significant other, if you're still dating,
mm-hmm.
there are absolutely times when it's about you. You know, you'll come home after fighting with insurance for mom and dad, and I know that when you go through the door, you had a really rough day and you need to vent, and it needs to be about you. But when we're out on dates trying to enjoy one another's mm-hmm. company, right? The other night we just went out to a Mexican restaurant, and that was a back and forth dialogue. You want to keep, whether it's relationship or dating or anything, it's got to be a back and forth.
Yeah, it's a give and take in life. It's what bonds you together with someone. It's fun to enjoy a conversation and journey together to that conversation destination, and get to know each other instead of it just being so one-sided. I have a family member who is very much, you know, when she walks in the room, she's going to be talking about herself and how great she is. And you're just like, oh Lord, I can't. I could take you in small doses.
Sure.
You're entertaining for about 15 minutes, and then I got to walk. And, you know, I think those kind of people are really not, they're just not aware.
Yeah. It's tough. And it's tough to have a conversation. It's tough to have that type of friendship, because it's really not going to improve, right? It's like going to AA and yet they're not admitting that they have a problem because they don't know they have a problem. So it does make it tough. And that even goes with, especially what we mentioned earlier, and especially with the youth, is the phone. It's tough to engage in conversation with someone that can't set the phone down. Like when we have family dinner,
nobody phones, has their phone out.
No, I always just leave mine sitting on the charger. The funny part of it is mom and dad are the first ones to get their phone, and it's always because they can't figure out.
Yeah, they have a question.
How do I check this voicemail? What is this message? What's going on here? My solitaire won't load, you know. But it is pretty funny that it's mom and dad that's always grabbing their phones, but
like little kids. But it's one of those things, even if you aren't on your phone, even having the phone next to you when you're on a date, let's say, subconsciously it's like, is that phone gonna ring or something's gonna happen where I'm no longer important, and now the phone takes precedent?
Sure.
Whether you ever touch it or not, it's that undercurrent of, you're as much of a priority it is until
in the moment.
Yeah. Something better comes along.
You're not important enough to get my full attention.
Yeah.
And that's tough, especially between husband and wife. Yes. I can't imagine sending a message to you through my actions that say you're not important enough, that you deserve my undivided attention. That may be true if I'm out with a group of friends and everybody's having a good time and, you know, we're all kind of there. I suppose I can check my phone for messages or this, that, and the other. But even then, it's you know, it's still not the greatest.
Yeah, and I think phone etiquette is not taught to kids, to adults. I mean, if you're at a social situation and you can't do anything but check your phone, you can't be social. You're antisocial. You're so uncomfortable with trying to engage with people and talk with people, you would rather tuck yourself away on a phone. And we're losing connection rapidly because phones have consumed our every moment. It helps us when we're uncomfortable. It helps us when we're bored. People do not want to be bored.
There's ever. Nothing wrong with being bored.
The most creative thoughts come out of boredom.
Yeah. Go create something. Go read the Bible, meditate. Go do something. Yeah. But I think the phone also takes away from one of the most intimate forms of communication, which is eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm staring down at the phone and I'm talking, even if I'm talking to you, but my eyes are down, again, what message is that sending to
somebody?
You're
not as important.
Yeah. How do you make friends in that situation? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I want people that find me important enough that they can set their phone down when we go to dinner and they don't have to check it.
Yeah.
And I it's odd that that's almost seen as a high bar these days.
I know. And this is just bottom of the barrel like stuff. And people are like, oh, it's so great. He didn't even have his phone out. It's called being polite and having manners.
Yeah, and it's called active listening,
mm-hmm.
right? If I'm sitting here and I'm engaging with you, like right now in the podcast as we're recording, you're shaking your head when I just said active listening. And we're looking at each other in the eye, you know.
Yeah.
There's a give and take that's happening with unspoken body language.
For sure. Right? More things are spoken through body language than actual words.
Yeah. And, you know, that phone creates just this barrier that is oftentimes impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to have a friend that can't look me in the eyes and have a conversation. So it's tough.
It's an epidemic is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a scary thing. And I think, you know, kind of transitioning almost to the next thing for me is, if you're not able to be a proactive listener and you're not able to set down your phone, a lot of times people will move to kind of unsolicited advice.
Yes. Yes. And I know that I can at times be guilty of unsolicited advice.
Oh, so me too. That's one that can creep up on you for sure. I think
most people have done this at some point in their life, but I've also learned not everyone wants to hear what I have to say. So there you go, right then and there. And furthermore, sometimes someone just needs to be heard. They're not looking for your advice. They're not looking for your two cents. And gauging the situation, sometimes you know right off the bat, this person just needs to vent. And then there are other times where you're put in the position where you're like, well, what do I do now after they're done venting? Just simply ask. Can I just listen and be here with you? Or do you want me to give some input?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there are different, you know, different people. I look at them and I've mentioned it, I think on the show before, is just different tools in a tool belt. So I will go to my dad for certain types of advice because I really respect it's in his lane. I really respect what he has to say there. So I'll go to him for that. But there's other lanes where I need advice that maybe I'll go to our mentor, Bill, mm-hmm. or I'll go to my buddy, Greg, in Colorado. You know, so if you're outside of your lane and you're giving advice, it could be falling on deaf ears. That can be tough.
Yeah, it's also a little bit like presumptuous that somebody really wants to hear your advice. Sometimes, yes, they do. And yes, it's appropriate. And you're in a mode where you can really feel the benefit of someone's advice. And then there are, you know, I have friends that have parents that are just like everything that they do or say has some sort of lecture attached to it. So parents do it. I've seen it in relationships with husbands and wives.
Bosses do it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And it's such a simple question, but just ask someone, are you looking for input or am I here to listen?
It is such a simple way to like give somebody the respect.
Yeah. What do you, because it's what do you need? Mm-hmm. Not what do I want to say? It's what do you need? Do you need to just get it out of your system because you were just on the phone with United Healthcare for 4 hours mm-hmm. and I'm the first person you saw and you're ready to pull your hair out? The last thing you need is me going, well, you should do this, 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 and this.
Oh, gosh.
That would be awful.
There you go. Conversation killer.
Yeah. You would go off the deep end or you would go on a walk by yourself or whatever, but whatever you were feeling towards me would not be good. And you don't need that in addition to being frustrated with a health insurance phone call, you know? Mm-hmm. So just that simple question of, are you looking for input from me or are you just, am I just here to lend a bartender's ear?
Yeah. I like that. A bartender's ear.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's great. That is something that I think if more people would just pause and take a deep breath and think of the conversation, especially if someone's frustrated, as an opportunity to serve them. That statement of how can I be present for you, it takes it to a point of deeper intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because you're there for them when you have that attitude. Maybe you don't need to ask the question, right? Sometimes it's blatantly obvious that this person is just here to vent. Or this person is here because they want my advice. You know, sometimes, a lot of times it is blatantly obvious, but if it's not, don't be afraid to ask that question.
Yeah.
That's being a good friend, that's being supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Even just business manager, you can have your subordinate that's just totally frustrated with a client and doesn't need to be lectured because they didn't close the sale. They need to just vent and be heard because they're frustrated and they're given that sale. It's all, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Servant hearted in all relationships does change the trajectory of how that relationship is going to go and whether it'll be a long standing relationship or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, another one of the items that we kind of wanted to talk through was just, unfortunately, revealing or weaponizing someone's past.
Oof.
They open up to you and they say something.
Mm-hmm.
And you use that against them, using their own words against them. That can bring a conversation and a friendship.
Yeah.
That's a fight. Screeching halt.
That's a fight.
That's time to throw down.
For real.
So has something like that ever happened to you?
Yeah, well, you know, having somebody maybe say to me, you know, why are you going to eat that? I thought you were on a diet.
Smartest thing to say to a woman ever.
It's none of your business. Now I'm going to chew it right, like, in your face.
I'm going to chew it like a horse.
Yeah.
So you got to sit there and listen to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a minor example of a bigger, you know, bigger things, but...
So if I can ask, you do a lot of work with healing mm-hmm. ladies from some pretty deep things and they got to expose some pretty intimate, you know, details of their past to get it out, right? So that the light can shine on it. So how do you be sensitive and respect that to allow someone to be that vulnerable and know that it will never be used against them? Because that'll be the quickest way to shut down the healing.
Oh, for sure. If you are to bring up someone's, you know, you're in a healing situation where you're in a group and you're using somebody's past to bring them to a point of, hey, you've walked this road before. It isn't about weaponizing It's about how you deliver that message of, I see a pattern and I love you and I want you I want you to have the good thing that's at the end of this journey, and that's healing. And in order to heal, it requires you to look at some of the patterns that you've had from the past and to acknowledge if you're repeating those patterns. And that's typically how I do it. So it's definitely about tone and tenderness when you're dealing with something traumatic. And being there graciously. There's a difference between helping somebody walk through a repeated pattern and then weaponizing something that it just depends on how you use it. It's how you hurt somebody with it. I'm not looking to hurt. I'm looking to speak life.
And there are obviously situations where there are other people in these classes with mm-hmm. you, right? It's not just you one-on-one.
Right.
There's multiple people in the class. Is that something like on week one that you establish as a ground rule of, hey guys, what happens in this class stays in this class. This is not to be taken outside, used against this person, and even just in dialogue in class, preventing that from mounting at all.
Sure. And in case anyone's listening for the first time, I do run a sexual abuse recovery class. So that's the class we're referring to. Yeah, there's a set of like guidelines. Like, hey, listen, what we say in this class is it's sensitive, it's sacred. And I use the word sacred because your wounds and your story is yours, and not everyone gets access to it. And I say that in class, not everyone gets access to it, but you're giving these people in class permission to have access. And we're going to respect and we're going to love you enough to keep that stuff guarded for your sake. It's like being in an AA class, you know, you have autonomy here. You have the freedom to say what needs to be said and know that it's not going to go beyond these walls to hurt you down the road. Yeah, that's important stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And that's important in friendships and in relationships, is to know that you have a partner that's not going to look at your past mistakes and continue to just pick them back up and show you, you did this, you did this. Now, there are those times where, you know, if you're repeatedly hurting your partner, they have a right to say something. But I'm talking about, you know, just saving something in your back pocket so you can whip it out like a, you know...
Pull it out like
Wyatt Earp. Like a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's
different.
Yeah, that was important to me in finding a spouse, was someone that, yeah, when I mess up, that you're not going to use that mistake and weaponize it against me to justify something down the road or whatever it was. So that can definitely be, you know, a conversation stopper mm-hmm. for sure. If somebody opens up and is vulnerable with you and you throw it right back in their face the next day,
you diminish trust.
I think the church can do a bad job with that. I think how many church wounds are created because someone goes in for counseling or this, that, and the other, and what they say just gets thrown right back in their face.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I have a very dear family member actually where that was the case, where she went to the church to get advice on a tough situation, and publicly the pastor brought it up.
Oh no.
And just mortified her. And to this day, she wants nothing to do with the church. And a lot of it stemmed from that.
Wow.
Where she had opened up and it got thrown back in her face. So that was, that can be a real tough situation.
That's sad.
Yeah. Very, very tough. But I think, next conversation stopper, belittling achievements we have written down.
Yeah. That's not so hard.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
Oh, can't with people that do that. I cannot. You know, let's say I'm not a runner. Anyone that knows me personally knows, like, I am not running unless I am being chased. If I tell you I run a marathon, not even a marathon, a 5K, and you go, that's not that big of a deal. That's not that hard. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm done. See ya.
Check out. Time to check out on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it can sometimes people just need there are absolutely days where I come home from work or you come home from work and I just need a win, even if it's a small one.
Yeah.
Like, babe, I just took out the trash. You may look at me and like roll your eyes internally, but
I would say thank you for taking such good care of the house.
Yeah. Even though I got beat up at work all day long and I took out the trash to get fresh air. Mm-hmm. There are times where taking out the trash needs to be celebrated.
Yeah.
Because it's just the little victory that I could muster up for that particular day.
Yeah. And it makes me think of the verse in the Bible that says, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. And some of us can be really good at being there for people when they're down. But when you're successful, sometimes people scatter.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that in your life, but sometimes your success makes people uncomfortable. Like, why aren't I doing more? And like, it's somehow they don't celebrate with you. They yeah. might say, yeah, good job. But inside, you know, well, we used to say it in Italian, they're giving you the maloikia, the evil eye. Like, it's probably silly and superstitious to say as a Christian, but it was a way of saying there are people that begrudge your success. So be careful.
Sure.
You know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also kind of leads nicely into one of the conversation starters that when we were going through notes, you had written down that I had to go, yeah, that's me, right? I'm the Eeyore. You're the Tigger.
Oh my goodness. I love you.
Yes. The conversation that is chronic negativity. Not that I sit and try and be negative, but I sometimes am, but I also don't have the same energy level in conversations and excitement that you do.
Yes. And again, it's not always negative. It's the unenthusiastic, unimpressed, it's just blah. Like, yeah, like Eeyore is a great example from Winnie the Pooh.
It's eating white toast with no butter on it. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody likes it. You just kind of got to run from it.
It's hard, especially if you're married to someone or you're dating someone who is definitely has a different personality. I mean, you're attracted to that person for a reason, but that those differences can also sometimes come with their own set of challenges because it's like you're sometimes, all right, like, can I get you excited? And what, come on, like, be with me on this. And,
oh yeah,
and I am a Tigger for sure.
Yeah, you are motivated by fun.
I am
100%, and there are times where I don't even realize
you're
that
no
I'm,
fun.
That I'm being a wet blanket to you, and you know, hopefully I'll snap out of it. But if I'm being honest with myself, it is something that I'm guilty of from time to time. You know, it depends on my day at work. There can be days just simply where I'm on a lot of calls.
Yeah.
And so all of my energy is drained being an introvert and being on a bunch of Zoom meetings all day long. It drains my energy. COVID was hard for us for this very reason because you, the social extrovert.
COVID killed me, man.
Yeah, you had no outlet to get energized, where me being the introvert, again, I had never been so busy my entire life. I work in digital.
Yeah, you were.
So I had never been so busy in my entire life. So I was on relentless phone calls, and I would get done with my workday, and you were Tigger because you had
all that pent up energy. I had no one to talk to all day.
And I was definitely Eeyore.
And you used up all your words.
Yeah. And so I know that during that time in our lives, you know, there were days where you needed me to be something that I just wasn't. So it's definitely something that I'm being more and more self-aware of and making that correction, because there is nothing like a conversation stopper where you're excited and you're enthusiastic. You have an idea and the other person, nothing.
Yeah. Blah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Oh, or just anyone that's been on Instagram or Facebook, every once in a while, you'll come across the video where women ask men where they want to go for dinner. And the man is just sitting there listing off this restaurant, that restaurant. And she's going, no, I don't feel like that today. And eventually the guy's like, whatever you want. I don't care where we go to dinner. And then a whole fight breaks out. You know, it can be that, but on a much more, intimate level where it's much more damaging than some silly little video on Instagram or something. It actually can cause a rift for sure.
Yeah. What, I don't even know how we seem to recover from that, but I don't know if we, I don't know if I sometimes just walk away and like go try to get energized somewhere else, or if I call you out on it, or it just depends.
Yeah. I think it's a little from column A and a little from column B. Yeah. It just depends on the situation and the scenario. And like I said, there are times where I'll catch myself and I go, oh, hold on. I'm being too much of an Eeyore here. I gotta,
I'm so glad. Thank you.
Yep. No, it's that's adulting, right? Realizing that you're messing something up and you got to do better. So that's something that I definitely have to pay attention to. So another one that we had written down for conversation stoppers was minor corrections that you had.
Yeah.
So you laugh. So
I laugh because sometimes I mispronounce words. And sometimes people correct me, and that's so annoying to me. I mean, in private, that's fine. Cause I do want to know how to say it correctly. And I do want to, not sound uneducated in any way, but, when people do that in front of other people, it is so demeaning. It is so, it's inappropriate. It's embarrassing. Yeah. My brother does that to people, and that really, that's one of those things where I was like, I don't even want to talk to you. Like, yeah. You're more concerned that I mispronounced a word than getting into a good conversation. Like, come on, stop it. Stop it.
Is it so do you think, not necessarily with your brother, but just in general, is it more about jockeying for I'm smarter? Is it?
Yeah, it does feel like it's a belittling of your education. No one wants to be made to feel stupid. It's one thing to do that privately after a conversation has already happened and you got the gist of the conversation and you had the connection, and then later on saying, hey, you know, you might mispronounce that word a little bit off. Can I help you with that? That's different than saying, you know, I think it's when people do this in front of other people, it is about like overpowering the conversation and making someone feel less than.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more about preserving the connection and not the correction. You know, people need to make sure that they're putting their priority in the right spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny. I was listening to a podcast today. It was a Christian podcast, or maybe it was yesterday. And, this guy was a guest on a show, and he was clearly the Christian, and he was a guest on someone's show that wasn't a Christian, but they were talking about Christianity. And the guest being the Christian was sitting there fielding questions and responding, and the host of the show didn't know how to pronounce sovereignty.
Oh.
And they kept saying, you know, sovranty. And he literally couldn't answer their questions because he couldn't understand what word are you taught. Like the sounds that you're making when you put them together, the English language doesn't work that way. Like they were so far off on pronouncing sovereignty. But once he pieced it together, just the joking that went back and forth, he didn't come about it like I'm smarter than you guys.
Right.
He just made it into a laugh. And so the conversation just continued to flow nicely.
That's good.
It was.
Yeah, there's a way funny. To do that in a tender, fun way.
Yeah, and he even the host was laughing about it. You know, he got the host laughing about it and so on and so forth. But it literally got to the point where he had the guy go on the internet and read him the definition of the word he was using.
And oh, my goodness.
Oh, you mean sovereignty. So it was quite funny. But yeah, just those corrections like that, it was handled so well on that particular podcast.
Graceful.
Yeah.
You know?
And you can make light of it, you know? And,
yeah, like don't take yourself so seriously that you can't have a little fun when you do make a mistake. It just, again, it how is that delivered? And it was delivered, it sounds like, in a really playful and whimsical way.
Yeah.
Like, I do want to understand what you're trying to say, and I want to answer your question, but I'm not quite getting it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there are ways to handle those types of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, that's one. Another conversation stopper. How about this one? Name dropping. Oh. How about name dropping?
I used to hang out with a guy that had to tell me every person he knew. And one day I was like, dude, like, number one, I don't even know these people. So it's no difference to me if you know them. And two, like, why do you need to qualify? Like, I'm your friend because I'm your friend, not because you know X, Y, and Z. Like, I could care less. And he was just like, oh, like, because I'm pretty straightforward. So after a while, after I've listened to him name drop for about a year, I was like, okay, that's it. We can't, you need to stop. And that gave him a lot of freedom to like, stop trying to, I don't need to be impressed. I'm not here for you to impress me. I'm here to be your friend.
Well, I almost wonder though, being in South Florida, mm-hmm. if he was trained that way, because so many friendships in South Florida are about what can you do for me? What can you offer me? What?
Yeah, very what kind of car self-serving. Do you have?
Yeah.
What can I get from you?
Yeah. Or is there value in having friendship with you?
I hated doing friendship in South Florida, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I almost wonder if the name dropping came from being in that type of atmosphere. I think
it comes from being completely insecure within yourself that you can't stand alone without having your posse of imaginary people behind you. Like,
well, but that, even that, the insecurity without having, again, stems from South Florida, right? If you don't have something to offer me, then I don't value you. So that creates the level of insecurity because you're not enough.
Yeah.
Your stuff is enough, or who you know is enough, not you.
And you see that in other places other than South Florida. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah, I think maybe that does boil down to what can you do for me and...
Yeah, it's creeping more and more into society. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to find friendship. What I love about my friendship with my buddy Greg is, you know, it's very low maintenance.
I know, that's cool.
We have nothing to offer each other but friendship. So, yeah, it's a great one.
It's pure.
Yeah, it totally.
You just show up as you are. I mean, you guys don't talk for like... years, and you get on the phone like you talked to him yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely, well, maybe not years, but it's a figure of speech. I think that women don't do that as well as men do. I think men do that really well. Yeah. No, I'm a woman. I'm telling you, you don't talk to us for a few months. We can like write, what's wrong with her? Is she mad at me? That's what it boils down. What did I do to piss her off?
Yeah, it's interesting to me that mom always has that reaction.
Yes.
She'll jump to that conclusion very quickly. It's interesting that because my family didn't do that, to see someone, you know, she's become my second mom, right?
Yeah.
So to be that close to someone that is almost her default at times.
What did
I
do wrong?
It's very odd. Yeah, it was very odd.
I grew up under that. So I grew up with the same concept of when someone stops talking or someone seems upset, my first go-to is, it's got to be me. What did I do?
The insecurity that leads to.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's how people become codependent. I need you to validate that we're okay. If you're okay, I'm okay. That's classic codependent. And yeah, I grew up under that kind of umbrella of something's got to be wrong. If you're not, you know, you're not happy with me, it must be me.
So that's got to be tough for you because the number of words that you use in a day versus me, you're the talker for sure.
I am.
So
a quadruple your words.
Oh, at least.
At least.
Just from you talking to yourself, you quadruple the words.
I have good words. Conversations with myself. Thank you very much.
I'm sure it's very deep. I can only imagine. But does that ever create a level of insecurity when you feel like I should be responding?
Yes.
I said something that should elicit a response,
and I'm not getting it. Oh, I've said that to you on many occasions. Like, hello. Can you answer? Even if you grunt, can you acknowledge I've said something? Yeah.
Where I'm sitting there going, she's just expressing herself, and if I don't have anything to add to the conversation, what, I'm going to grunt?
Not saying anything makes someone feel ignored.
Yeah, that's tough for me sometimes with you, is just knowing that, you know, with Deb, she is looking for a response here. I don't want her to feel active like
listening.
Yeah, I don't want her to feel like I'm not listening, because I am. Just because I don't respond doesn't mean I'm not listening. It can mean I'm processing. It can mean I wasn't expecting a response to be needed. You know, who knows?
Sometimes the body language is you're on your phone.
Oh, you're going to go down that road, are you? On live
I love
recording.
You, though.
Yeah.
We can edit that out if you want.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that can be a tough one, you know. I think the kind of the last thing that we had was beating a dead horse. So,
boy, I really laughed on that one.
Yeah, that's something. It can be tough when you're trying to prove a point. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's with work. Yeah, maybe it is with a spouse or a significant other that you're sitting there trying to quote unquote win an argument,
right?
Rather than dialogue back and forth, come to an understanding. When you're in that mode of I need to win this, I will beat a dead horse.
Yeah, that's definitely a trait I've seen in my own family. So it's something I put on the list because I do think it kills conversation. Like once you've made your point, and nothing's going to change at some point, like why do you continue to bring it up? It's not going anywhere. It doesn't yield any fruit. Why are you doing it? Or if you've won, let's say you've won a discussion, and I hate to use the word won because discussion shouldn't be about winning and losing. It's about collaboration, communication, you know.
Understanding.
Has the person felt heard? Understanding is a perfect word for that. I think I lost my train of thought. Yeah. Where was I going with this? Oh, beating a dead horse.
just driving a point home.
Yeah, well, it doesn't serve anything to do that. Now you just want to dominate.
Yeah.
And that kills a conversation. And I guarantee that person's not going to want to talk to you about at least that subject ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would I want to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and move on, especially if it's a close friend. You really don't need to do that at all. As Christians, we're supposed to give the benefit of the doubt as much as possible. Like that's part of the covenant that you and I are in as, mm-hmm. as a married couple, is I'm always going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Amen. Likewise.
So I don't need to beat a dead horse with someone that I'm trusting as much as I trust you, with as much of my life and my heart and so on and so forth. I don't need to beat a dead horse. But I know for myself, I can fall into the trap of beating a dead horse with work, especially if I feel like I'm not being heard for so long and then finally given an opportunity to speak into something. That's when the beating a dead horse can come up. Because I'm finally getting the opportunity, and it's just this tsunami of I haven't been heard for weeks or months, and finally I'm being asked my opinion. I can still cause disengagement, which is the worst thing, from the people that were originally offending me. Now they're completely disengaged with me.
And you haven't gotten what you wanted anyway.
And even getting what I want, it's not the point. You know, there's more important things to life than right and wrong a lot of times, especially in a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely that's the case in friendship. You know, what good is it to be right? You know, if you and I are getting into an argument and all of a sudden I win, quote unquote, win the argument and you lose. Well, now I'm sharing a house
right
with someone that I've made feel like a loser. You know, it the math ain't mathin' in all of this.
That's true.
So yeah, beating a dead horse it's never really a good idea.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Debbie Downers and the Carol Complainers.
Oh, Debbie, well, I see, I call myself an Eeyore. So to me, that's a Debbie Downer. Oh. Eeyore. So is there a difference to you?
I do think there's a difference. I think a Debbie Downer is someone that is just, no matter what, they're going to find something negative to point out so that every conversation turns negative. I think an Eeyore is more like sometimes you're just not always enthusiastic or excited. It's an energy level where a complainer is someone that is looking to be critical. Always. There's always something negative to say about someone. And that's how they actually try to build connection with someone else. Well, we'll have a common thing we dislike. Mm. We'll have something we hate together.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of how gossip begins to fester is, well, we'll stay connected because we're talking about this thing that we both can't stand, you know, like.
Sure.
That can get very draining very fast.
Yeah, it can create a very toxic friendship, work mm-hmm. environment, so on and so forth.
Yep. It feeds off of negativity. Couldn't get that word out.
Well, I was watching recently a clip of Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about the worst thing you can do with convicts is lock them up together because they feed the negative traits of a convict. They're just around other people with those exact same negative traits. And so they train one another to get, it depends on how you want to look at it, better and better at their negative traits or worse and worse at their negative trait. Mm-hmm. But it just compounds what happens. So he did a bunch of studies on inmates being in like support groups amongst other inmates versus taking them out of that scenario and putting them with other people that are, you know, in a different place in life. And he said, you know, when you put inmates in with other inmates, all they do is their negativity just feeds the negativity of one another. And they constantly feel like they have to be worse than the guys they're in there with.
Yeah, you could see that happening in working relationships. If you have one lazier person or one person who is disgruntled with the company, that starts to wear off. Like you can test productivity and go, wow, you know, this one person can bring down productivity, just like the person that's achieving and is striving for success can bring up other coworkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, Debbie Downers, I can see. I always associate it, like I said, with Eeyore, but yeah, that's an interesting take on it.
Yeah. A little bit different, I think.
Yeah. Definitely a little bit different now that you've unpacked it. Mm. But when I was looking through your notes, to me, I interpreted them as being the same kind of thing. So maybe I'm a Debbie Downer and an Eeyore because I made them the same thing. I don't know. I'll have to meditate on that. Why did I do that?
No, I don't think you're a Debbie Downer that often. I mean, we can all be
not that often.
We can all be a Debbie Downer. I know that I'm definitely at times I get into these modes where everything's a catastrophe in my mind and I've preempted the worst case scenario 100 times over. And then I've dwelt on how everything's going to fall apart in an instant. And then you come around and you're like, babe, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
None of those things are happening right now. So yes, I could be a Debbie Downer too.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as we've kind of talked through all these conversation stoppers, one of the themes that you'll notice between almost, maybe all, but at least almost all of these is learn to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. Being a good listener and understanding what someone is saying is so valuable in today's society because being a good listener it's kind of fallen by the wayside, sadly.
It's a rare thing to be a good listener. I think there's also that level of I'm here not just for me, but for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a servant attitude that I am here to give you a part of my heart, but I want to see how I can benefit your life.
Yeah. And it's also goes, you know, biblically back to even Job of his friends. Mm. It's not about, I'm not here to fix you. I'm here to be with you. Mm. So listening, I'm here with you. I'm not, if I'm listening to you, I'm not fixing you. I'm here with you. I'm present.
Yeah.
Constantly. Don't look at people as I have to fix this person.
Yeah. It's there's just, always shame attached to fixing somebody. Yeah,
it's just be present in their life.
Amen
sure.
to that.
Yeah. And sometimes this is, my specialty, but sometimes silence wins because silence can say a lot more than words, right? Being there and being present and listening can be a lot more valuable sometimes than talking. Sometimes it's not. I'm not saying
right
that there isn't value in words. But again, ask that question, are you me to vent? Or, am I here for you to vent? Or am I here for you to bounce ideas off of?
Yeah.
Going back to that question, but recognize that silence can win the day sometimes.
I see that in us sometimes where you're silent and it's actually a peaceful silence. And I've not had that in my life. And I haven't had that in any other relationship, that sometimes I know that your silence isn't, I'm distancing myself from my wife. It's, I'm this strong beacon of steadiness. And it's so good. So, so good. I would say that sometimes silence is incredibly gifting and a value to a relationship. And you do that for me.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I think, one other theme that I kind of notice across all these topics that we've mentioned today is just humility. If I'm not here to fix you, if I'm not, all these things that we talked about today, it's just that humility, because I think the world is becoming more and more prideful. More and more prideful that if you can show humility, if you can show curiosity, and if you can show empathy, that people are going to value your friendship on a lot deeper level and a lot different levels than maybe other friendships they have in their life.
Yeah. I heard a really interesting statistic on that, that people who are the most popular, they took high school kids. They're the most popular. They weren't how many people they liked. It was how many people felt liked by them.
By their peers.
Like the most popular people made people feel liked, made people feel important. And that's why they were popular.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is.
It's servantness or servant heartedness without even realizing you're doing it. I'm so curious about you that I want to engage with you. It isn't about me. You're right. So it's that humility.
Yeah. So it's interesting because that's, the Bible says, don't conform to this world. The world is becoming more prideful, more about self. So if you can exercise listening and humility and so on and so forth, you will be promoted without sounding like a prosperous gospel here. You will be promoted within your own group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, but yeah, guys, we've talked about a lot of different things today. So which type of conversation killers are you? We all are.
Yeah.
Every single one of us have one or two, at least, of these items that we do. And we got to go, I got to
get better at that one.
I got to be more self-aware. Mm-hmm. I got to put myself in check.
Mm-hmm.
So which one of those are you guys? And what is the habit, that you can replace with intentional listening?
It's a good question for the audience to be left with, to really meditate on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully these things have helped you guys.
Because we've enjoyed talking about it.
Absolutely. So that is the conclusion, I suppose, of today's episode.
I think so. And of course, we're going to ask you to like and subscribe and write a review. It means so much to us. And we enjoy just being here with you.
Hanging out with you, Deb. Always fun hanging out with the audience. Yes. Thanks for listening. We will catch you guys in the next episode.
All right. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.